Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. Thanks for being here. I appreciate you showing up. So, good morning, good afternoon, good night. Wherever you happen to find yourself in your life, in your moment, I hope you're having a decent one. I know decency and goodness and okayness are all very vague terms that are difficult sometimes to peg down. You know, in the world of relativity, what makes something good? What makes something decent? How do I know if I'm okay? You know, a lot of these questions are difficult to nab down in a concrete sense. So let's take the idea of okay. You know, are you okay right now? I don't know. Am I okay? I think so. But okayness as a whole is not an ancient concept in any way, shape, or form. In fact, the word itself is less than 200 years old. It's disputed, and there's a couple different origin tales for this. But most people think that the word okay has its origin in all correct, like all but all, and then all correct is like all right, kind of, and it's a misspelling of these words, so it's kind of confusing, but it starts here in the United States is where most people think. But as a concept, when we start to apply meaning to a term, especially a new term, you know, there's a lot of ambiguity in what makes something okay. And a lot of the time, that answer that we give people is a non-committal answer because we're not quite sure of our own status inside, you know? And so somebody comes up to you and says, hey, Charlie, Beth, whatever, how are you doing today? And you don't really want to have a long conversation with somebody. So you say, oh, I'm doing okay. I'm all right. You know, it's almost an effort to not have to speak about one's actual status or feelings. You know, and so I want to be careful when I come across in this positivism essence and when I'm trying to say, go be the best you can be. You know, that's a highly relative concept, and I realize that. And so you have to figure out what your own personal best is going to be. And so, I hope you're doing okay, even though I overcomplicated that. So, this week, I've been doing fair. I've been struggling a little bit with interpersonal communications. I've been relinquishing control, or trying to, which control is one of these super heavy, heavy modes of being that we humans have to incorporate sometimes, because as social creatures, we do have to be able to work together, and often that requires leadership. And even though there are certain types of societies out there that might be very democratic or very laissez-faire, I think it's necessary to have a point, like a point to the knife, or like when you see a bunch of geese flying, you know, and they always have the one leader of the V, and then I'm pretty sure in murmurations and how birds fly, they always pay attention to the closest birds next to them, and using those, but it all starts with the first one going that sets the pace, you know, and like line leaders in kindergarten. You know, and it doesn't have to mean that the leader has to be an asshole, but authority often has to have a line of almost aggression, it seems, at least in men. And I think that women certainly lead differently. And in a lot of situations, I'd almost prefer a woman as a leader, because of some of the subtle differences. But in teams of men, in my experience, this line of aggression has been necessary in order to hold things together and to get shit done, you know? My father works on film crews, and he talks about the position of the assistant director, where you have the director, which is above, and that's the vision, and is the one who is like the president of the operation. But filtered through the president's or the director's will is the assistant director's efforts. And often the person in this position has to be harsh and demanding in order to get things done from gigantic crews of people who all have their own sub-leaders and supervisors. And so you have this chain of accountability that happens in these large-scale operations. And that's not what I'm doing. You know, I work in a kitchen with three people at a time. But even then, whether it's macro or micro, there's so many like subtle interpersonal things that happen. And I've been in this pseudo authority role for such a long time, you know, and there's never a conversation about me being in charge. I was just in seniority and I worked hard and I had a thick ethic. And so, and for a while I was working practically by myself. So I earned the ability to be able to do it all and to know that I could get my job done, you know. And I know there's people out there listening to me who you find yourself in a similar position. Work ethic is challenging. And like I say often on the show, there's a spectrum of being out there in the world, and there's a spectrum of being human. And within all those different metrics that can be put on the spectrums of beings, there is an ethic, a work ethic, and how hard somebody can work and a person's pace. And I don't like to say that people are dumb, but there is a dullness and a brightness on that spectrum of being too. And some people shine brighter than others. And because of my ability to work hard and to work fast and to be a yes man, I have often fallen and settled into this position, just like when you have a cup of coffee and I don't know if you have a French press, but some sediment typically gets through. And on the bottom of the cup of coffee, after it cools down and you sat it around for a little bit, this process is called decanting. Once it's decanted, you have that sediment on the bottom. And that sediment is a metaphor to what I'm speaking about. So I've been trying to relinquish this pseudo-authority. I had a long-term person who has more seniority than me in the company who was promoted to a general managership of the business that I work for. And I've been working directly under the boss for a while, and I've been fortunate to be in this mom-and-pop situation. And because of this closeness to my authority figure, you know, I almost brown-nosed my way into my comfort level with what I was doing. And my boss doesn't have a lot of trust in anybody else. So I was fortunate in that way, in a way. Sometimes unfortunate, if you consider it. And so now that we got a new guy, everybody's jockeying for position, and we're all a bunch of younger men's. And so people are finding the new dynamics and how people are going to relate to each other now that the boss is gone. And I found myself getting frustrated because I have these ideals for what I thought I was in my position at this place. But beyond my position and beyond a role that I perform, we are all at our base humans. We don't have to explicitly be what we do. And a lot of the time, what our being is a direct contradiction of what we do. Sometimes we have to do things just to survive. That doesn't imply identity. You see? And so I'm starting to realize how much of my identity has been hung up in this social role that I've been performing for almost 2 years, that was lackadaisically scripted and loosely formed. And because of that, the frustration comes again from the lack of complicity in this ideal and the real. What is real? And I know this is an old concept for me, and this is something I speak a lot about, but what is real? What is unreal? Is reality based in what it's not or what we can't see? A lot of people's realities and self-image is based in concepts that are intangible and impermanable. If something isn't stable and steady, can we consider it to be real? In the Buddhist concepts and other Eastern philosophical storydoms, you know, the fact that nothing in life is permanent and nothing is stagnant and nothing is stable means that everything is illusory. But I don't quite follow this to the T for myself and my own personal philosophical wonderings. I think that reality is present and is very real. But the way that we react and how we interact with reality is always filtered through our own systems of idealizations. What is ideal? An ideal is an idea. An idea is a plant that has grown from a seed, and that seed is called a thought. A thought is a mental machination of my biological being, of my brain, of my chemical hormonal processes that I have been born into through the evolutionary material processes of millions of years of chaotic chance that has designated life on this planet. And now has diversified into a myriad of millions of bajillions of gajillions of different ways that that living force and that vibrating in synchronicity that allows for some sort of perception of that living, which I would like to call consciousness, but I'm not even sure if that's what it is, you know? So the ideas and the ideal comes from all of this evolutionary backload. But there's a separation between the machine and the environment that it has to compute. And I hate to call us machines, but the biological form is a machine. And somehow we ride in it and we have this perception of it. And as we pilot our machine and we have our perceptions of what we're doing and how we feel about it, we pilot our machine through this world of objective material. So, all the material is concrete. We can be fairly certain that as everything appears to us and all the things that we've grown up with, they're going to keep doing what they're doing even if they're impermanent. And we can learn the patterns of how things fall apart. And we can try to make them fall apart less as well. But when it comes to the role our machine is playing, so I'm a cook, and I have maneuvered myself through this world and found a way to support myself through this act that feeds people. And it further gets abstracted because for some reason everybody's using money, which is paper, a debt note that stands for something in the real world. Money is the ultimate idea. What is your role? How have you maneuvered in your life to support yourself? What actions and what talents have you learned in order to manipulate the materials and the objective things around you? Now, I'm sure whatever those things that you've done or you're going to do today or tomorrow are very important to you. I'm not going to take those away. is because nobody can take away my ability to cook or my ability to support myself either. But how much of happenstance and chance has led you through the game of life to this spot and to this role? Is there a possibility and chance that your machine, your being, that you are piloting, the real you, the real self, the permanent one, is there any chance that you could see yourself in a different role? Is there fear? Do you feel the acid curdle of indigestion at the mere thought of doing something that's the polar opposite of what you're doing right now? But is there a chance? See, all the stuff that we're not doing, all the stuff that we don't use to describe who we are, there's a long list of things that we do use to identify ourselves, but there's a much, much longer list that we use, that we deny, that we say that we aren't. But in reality, all it takes to get to that position of all the things that we're not doing is just to walk a different direction. And this brings up the reason why I wanted to bring up all this situation, all frustration that I know is existent, is that how can we let go of a position in our head? Now, artistic expression, at least for me, has been a process of letting go. In order for me to sit down and to be able to create something, I have to put my intellect down for a smidgen of time. I need to be able to rest, come to rest, and stop moving and stop mechanizing for a little bit. My reasoning taskmaster, my ego, though strong, very strong-willed at least, it has little to do with my creative process. And the more I think about things, I can think myself out of being able to be creative with it. Life and the way we live and create ourselves, hence the word create ourselves, we live artistically, we make ourselves artistically. So it makes me think, if I have such a hard time producing something beautiful on paper, how am I going to produce something beautiful in my life if I stranglehold it tight? So our lives and our connection to our reality is the most realistic thing we have. And once we start thinking about it, it becomes more abstract. And like living our lives, making choices, interacting with things are very real things. Now let's take that tendency to hold on, which is sometimes based in fear and sometimes based in security, or sometimes based in a sense of contentment or happiness. Well, let's apply that to something intangible. You know, what if we're trying to hold on to an idea of abstract wealth or success? What if we put our personality and our identity into an ideal of who we are that purely exists in our head? If it doesn't have any connection to reality, how much can we trust it? And even though we've all found and made these roles in society, and society has a need, say for my instance, people need to be fed, people need to eat. In capitalism, you also need to have business. You have to make things. So there's a need for it. But in a different environment and not as large of a society, say 10,000 years ago, hunter and gathering, you know, there's not as much of a need for this restaurant to pipe people in an industrial fashion because there's so many people requiring food. If you had a restaurant 10,000 years ago and somebody built a hut with, you know, out of mud, a mud hut, and Ook Ook wanted to sell pizzas there, I really doubt he would make much of a living trying to sell pizzas to his own family, especially when there's not a lot of other families around that need it. So we found ourselves in this environment that has made a bunch of new artificial needs, you know, and they're very real in our society, but in reality as a whole, we made them. We've orchestrated this society. And though we don't choose to be born, we choose to stay in society for comfort, you know, but there's a lot of abstractions here and a lot of things that we do that are chosen and are much more human than earthly. You see what I'm saying? And so I might have a role as a cook. You might be a waiter or a waitress or a server. You might be a powerful politician. You might be a businesswoman. You might be a dog handler. You might pick up dog shit. There's all kinds of roles out there, but even though I say you might be, you're not that. You're you. And you've donned on a hat and you've put on all these separate clothes and all these different ways to express it. And that's okay. We need to do that. But just take stock and try to let go sometimes of the intangible and try to look for a little closer to find the more realistic. I hope that helps. I've been thinking a lot about these kind of things. You know, one of the most important parts of my life is psychedelia. And even though I don't think you need drugs and you don't need chemicals to find yourself or to find your path, one of my biggest teachers in life have been the altered states of consciousnesses that these chemicals induce. And one of the things I've been finding a lot in my life and in my interactions, I've had a lot of people approaching me recently having a hard time to get what they want out of it. And expectation is the bane of all evil in a lot of these instances. And it's the problem that I see over and over again is the mental struggle to make something happen. You know, and we can make things happen, but a lot of the times we can just try and the actual results are still going to be a little bit different than what we wanted. And that's art. You know, I rarely end up with a product when I'm artistically expressing myself that's exactly what I wanted. And the more I want something, the less I get what I liked. And that's kind of how approaching these chemical substances are. And with this upsurge and renaissance of just acknowledgement, and people are really talking about these things right now. And it's such a big thing that I think you're going to have this huge resurgence of people struggling with it too, because they're not a cure-all. And doing psychedelia is kind of like meditating, and it takes practice to be able to meditate correctly and to do these things and to use them well is hard. And it's not like anybody can just go take them. It's something I'm coming to terms with. New people, novel, like newbies, you know, rookies, insert here. Of course, most of the time, if the set and setting's correct and they're surrounded by love, usually a new person is going to be exposed to something exciting and brilliant. But as a user starts to develop a practice in trying to delve into these other parts of our mind, into these other states of consciousness, these other realms of being, we almost become jaded to the experience. And I think the crucial crook here is that reasoning element, that intellect and that ego that starts to stand in the way, that becomes more powerful as we become more suited and we get our astronaut suits and our boots are all tied and we're ready for walking and we get going. We strengthen all parts of ourselves, I think, you know, and we strengthen our ability to feel sad too, like the emotionality. We increase our emotionality, and that can fuck people sometimes too, because if you're already an emotional person, you start delving into these chemicals too much, you can become too emotional, and that can help disattach you from your world, you know? Like, But it's an increasing of sensitivity when we start to delve into these worlds. And the more you can see, the clearer your vision is, the more likely it is to see something that's harmful or harsh. And so I'm starting to see more of the need for community and socialization in these things. And even though I'm a solitary user, I worry about a lot of people using these things on their own. But if you do choose or see yourself embarking on these quests, like I see myself doing for the rest of my life, consider again all these concepts that we've been talking about today. Consider our connection to reality. Consider the distances between thoughts and abstractions. Consider how letting go of certain ideals and roles and positions and expectations for ourselves and for our actions can sometimes be the most necessary thing to get to the next movement in our own personal development. I say that with love. I love you. I hope you love you too. And I hope you find a way to be the best you can be this week. I'm gonna go grab a book real quick, and then we'll see how Odin's doing, and then I'll let you go. Just be. This is from a collection orchestrated by Thomas Merton, but these are the supposed writings and sayings of Chuangzi Zhuangzi. He was a Chinese Taoist. A lot more people believe he existed than, say, like Lao Tzu, because it's such a long time ago, and it's hard to really distribute ownership of ideas when there's that much time. So this is under the heading Autumn Floods. Here goes. The autumn floods had come. Thousands of wild torrents poured furiously into the Yellow River. It surged and flooded its banks until, looking across, you could not tell an ox from a horse on the other side. Then the river god laughed, delighted to think that all the beauty in the world had fallen into his keeping. So downstream he swung until he came to the ocean. There he looked out over the waves towards the empty horizon in the east, and his face fell. Gazing out at the far horizon, he came to his senses and murmured to the ocean god, "Well, the proverb is right. He who has got himself 100 ideas thinks he knows more than anybody else. Such as one am I. Only now I do see what they mean by expanse." The ocean god replied, "Can you talk about the sea to a frog in a well? Can you talk about the ice to dragonflies? Can you talk about the way of life to a doctor of philosophy? Of all the waters in the world, the ocean is the greatest. All the rivers pour into it, day and night. It is never filled. It gives back its waters day and night. It is never emptied. In dry seasons, it is not lowered. In flood time, it does not rise. Greater than all other waters, there is no measure to tell how much greater. But am I proud of it? What am I under heaven? What am I without yang and yin? Compared with the sky, I am a little rock, a scrub oak, on the mountainside. Shall I act as if I were something? Of all the beings that exist, and there are millions, man is only one. Among all the millions of men that live on earth, the civilized people that live by farming are only a small proportion. Smaller still, the number of those who have office or fortune travel by carriage or by boat. And all of these, one man in his carriage is nothing more than the tip of a hair on a horse's flank. Why then all the fuss about great men and great offices? Why all the disputation of scholars? Why all the wrangling of politicians? There are no fixed limits. Time does not stand still. Nothing endures. Nothing is final. You cannot lay hold of the end or the beginning. He who is wise sees near and far. As the same does not despise the small or value the great. Where all standards differ, how can you compare? With one glance, he takes in past and present, without sorrow for the past or impatience with the present. All is in movement. He has experience of fullness and emptiness. He does not rejoice in success or lament in failure. The game is never over. Birth and death are even. The terms are not final. So that's one of my favorites by him. Yet again, this idea of relativity. Big, small, good, bad. It's all in your own head. You have an immense control to pick which direction you're going. But within that control, if you hold on too tight, you're not going to go where you want. I go, Crabbo.
Hello. So?
Show.
How did you do?
How do you do?
Good.
Good.
Yeah, I'm doing a little bit bad because basically I got hurt a bunch.
He's got road rash.
Yeah.
You want to tell him what you've been doing?
Playing.
How?
With my friends.
And your bike.
And my bike.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you didn't notice, I actually have a mountain bike. I practice riding.
And he's really good at it.
Yeah.
I'm very proud.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any advice you have to tell your friends this week?
No.
How do you think is the best way to be happy?
Well, the best way to be me happy is play.
I like that. Do you think adults can play too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna end.
Okay.
Soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.